Another hamlet that lived and died with the iron industry was Fletcherville. Fletcherville, like Hammondville, was testament to the drive and desire of the entrepreneurs and capitalists who looked upon the Adirondack wilderness and saw opportunity. Local historian Morris Glenn recognized the uniqueness of the furnace at Fletcherville.
I'm Morris Glenn. I'm a retired oceanographer. And when I retired, I came up here to summer in Essex, New York, and immediately got interested in the ironworks. Well, I have never seen any other furnace similarly equipped, half a modern iron furnace and half an old stone furnace. I've just never seen that. It's amazing because it was so different. Kind of like the jokes you've heard about animals being half one kind, a zebra with wings, for example. It was sort of a furnace with wings. I mean, it just had no reason to exist in its form.
These ghost towns fascinate me. Thomas Witherby studied at RPI and had a strong vision for the future of mining. While the furnace was initially built in 1864-1865 by Jerome R. Bailey, Thomas began as his assistant and became Bailey's successor. The workers in Fletcherville were Irish. When the mine shut down, these people must have been left high and dry. Thomas Witherby, of course, continued on with his career. Those that called Fletcherville home quickly became impoverished. Morris Glenn told a story of a woman left there.
I know that after the end of Fletcherville's time, the people didn't want to leave. And an old miner lived in Westport, New York, and I interviewed him. And he said that it was so poor, and in the wintertime, when there weren't any garden or vegetables or what have you to eat, that Essex County actually provided food wagons that would come up the hill from Elizabethtown, and that his mother had fallen in love with one of the wagon drivers of the food wagons that came up from Elizabethtown. Eventually, all the former miners died out. They left. They got jobs elsewhere. And now there's absolutely no building of any kind standing. It's a true ghost town.
To me, Fletcherville, this impossible zebra with wings, was the combination of the visionary scientist and the miner's widow. Here they are, side by side, from my impression.
My husband was among the first to sign on at Fletcherville. He'd been working at a bloomer, but this was an opportunity to work in a modern blast furnace. Our Fletcherville house was small and plain, but I cleaned up the front stoop best I could and grew some of the best vegetables. I even grew flowers. My neighbor Maggie used to laugh and sneer at me. Oh, it's a waste of time you grew in those things. They just make the place look poorer and uglier and takes away room for the beans and potatoes that will help you last the winter. I liked my flowers, my dahlias especially. I kept the bulbs in the cellar over the winter. I know Mrs. Witherby would approve of my flowers.
With great eagerness, I attended the lectures on metallurgy and chemistry at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. I applied myself to my studies until late into the night. My purpose fueled my energy. I had a desire to cultivate every capacity of a man of science, understand every operation, and render the purest and strongest product.
The work was hard, and Bailey and Witherby kept my man busy 6 days a week. They were producing so much iron, I heard that for every ton of iron they produced, they would get as deep into a gallon of whiskey. He'd come home at night either so tired or drunk he'd barely finish supper before he was fast asleep.
Man has invented ways to power the boats on Lake Champlain with steam instead of horses. That's how Bailey devised this furnace to be steam-powered. Our dependence on moving water is no longer necessary.
Sundays after church, me and the man would sit on the stoop in good weather or take a walk. Beautiful view up in Fletcherville, not a tree in sight to block the mountains to the north, and the lake and the rolling green mountains above the lake to the east.
I was able to create a fully equipped lab at Fletcherville to analyze both the mineral content and strength of the iron. Production is round the clock and quality is consistent. We are unstoppable. We gained the respect of the industry as scientists. Our scientific papers are renowned and we have various patents. We will increase our capacity to the utmost.
I was in the garden tending the dahlias when they came running for me. My man had been hurt bad, crushed by what they call a flake. This was a flake of iron weighing 2 tons. He was killed instantly, thank the Lord. And I was left with nothing but an empty stoop and my vanity, my dahlias. I should have planted beans.
Our Fletcherville iron had been shipped to be worked at the ironworks at Clinton Prison in Dannemora and the nailworks in Keysville and Ausable Forks. Transportation by canal boat and railway to Troy and beyond increases our capabilities to supply the continent.
I had nowhere to go, so I stayed on.
Things have taken a turn in 1873. A severe drop in price from $60 to $30 a ton. I am forced to shut Fletcherville down.
Still stayed on even after they closed the furnace. Old Maggie and her man stayed on as well, till he drank himself to death. Then Maggie went downstate to live at her son's. I tried to live off my little plot of land, but we were so poor up in Fletcherville that the county brought up a food truck to help us out. The driver was a fine gentleman. That summer, he saved the reddest and prettiest tomatoes for me before winter was setting in and I was putting up the last of my beans. The tomato man came for me. He proposed and I said yes. And then he took me down the mountain away from that sad hillside.
In 1884, the Reverend John Talbot Smith was doing research for his book, A History of the Diocese of Ogdensburg. He made the following observation just 10 years after Fletcherville was abandoned.
Surely a more desolate place cannot be imagined than this ruined mining settlement, lying high up in the mountains, where the soil is thin and poor, and where the trees have been cut off for miles around, burned to feed the great furnace, which is now but a heap of shapeless ruin. Time has veiled the hillsides with thick, slender, second-growth timber. But the village houses still stand unshielded upon the bare slopes.
From all you careless miner boys who toil in underground, and if you'll pay attention, the truth I'll now pen down. 'Twas all about a miner boy who's young and in his prime, who lost his life one fatal night down in the Joker mine. This young man's name was Brennan, his age was 23. His parents lived in Mineville and raised him tenderly. His parents lived in Mineville and it grieved their hearts full sore to know the son they'd raised on earth they'd never see no more. 'Twas on a Thursday evening in 1903, he went to work down in the mine, his heart so full of glee. But a dismal sight before daylight caused his comrades to whine, to see Brennan fall 300 feet down in the Joker mine. They carried Brennan to his home, good Christians for him prayed, and the baseball nine of Witherby. They lowered him in his grave, and the baseball nine of Witherby. They lowered him down to rest. His spirits and intentions are now with him at rest. Minor boys, and a warning I will give. When you go down in those dark holes, be careful what you say. For a many a youth, a fearless youth, has met up such a fate.